Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and FilmIntuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. It's wonderful to have back Elizabeth Cantwell this week. Elizabeth is a poet, scholar, teacher, and writer whose work you can read at the film journal Right Wall Dark Room, where she's also an editor.
Elizabeth, I am so thrilled to have you back. Like I said off air, you're one of the smartest people I know, and I'm excited to explore any topic with you. I always learn something, especially because this is not my genre overall, and I do want to learn more. Kind of stay away from the gore and stuff that's going to give me nightmares. Otherwise, I'll be like phoning you at 3 a.m, like, what did you make me watch? But I was excited for haunted houses and everything. But before we get into that, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I mean, I think, 2025 has not been the kindest year to most people, especially out here in LA. It got kicked off to a rocky start with the fires. And, my family and I are just trying to find the joy in the little things, going to a lot of Little League games for my oldest kid, and watching my middle kid enjoy second grade. And my middle kid just discovered the Wings of Fire books, Fire book series. So that's been very exciting to see, like, the budding reader starting to happen. I love that stage in kids when they discover books and literature and are like, wow, stories are cool. Trying to hang tight, trying to see the joy in the non-joyful world around me, I guess. I'm teaching a class on existentialism, which has been
weirdly one of my favorites.
It's been really actually interesting to be reading existentialist philosophy and going, how do we make meaning when life feels absurd?
Yes. Oh my goodness. I love that. That's my favorite philosophy for sure. I mean, I remember enjoying that. I like the idea of the Stoics in theory. And actually, I just bought, you will appreciate this because we can't keep it in stock at work, but Marcus Aurelius's Meditations.
Oh, nice.
We have so many we just can't keep in stock. We've been selling a lot of Sartre and a lot of like, oh my goodness. So that's really
relevant.
Yeah.
Feels relevant to our world.
Yeah. And I feel like, we're also selling a lot of like the let them theory. Like right now people are, oh my gosh, there's jerks going on. And so we're trying to make sense of it. We can't keep 1984 in stock either.
Right.
So right by the register at Poison Pen, we have 1984 and On Tyranny.
Okay.
And it's a little bit hilarious. Like people will walk by like, yep, I need that.
But listen, like those books are out there that speak to our current moment. And I'm glad people are reading them.
Yeah, and The Handmaid's Tale. We just got like 10 more copies. Same thing. So I'm glad you're teaching existentialism. You've taught a lot of really cool classes on horror. And so I'm wondering, have you ever taught anything on haunted houses and ghosts?
Well, there was one year where I was teaching AP Lit, which you can kind of... the AP Lit curriculum, you can kind of modify to whatever you want it to be as long as you're hitting some key literary terms and stuff.
Yeah.
Did a course on ghosts, and that was really fun. We did like The Turn of the Screw. We read The Year of Magical Thinking actually.
Ooh.
In that class.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. It's been a while actually since I taught that class. Oh, and The Haunting of Hill House, obviously.
Nice.
We'll probably talk about some today.
Yeah.
But yeah, ghosts and hauntings are very interesting to me. And I'm excited to talk about the haunted house movies that we picked because I feel like as I was watching them to prepare for this podcast, I was seeing all of the different sort of similarities that they all had. It's like
Yes.
they all have the same ingredients, but they make a different recipe each time, which is so fun and cool.
It is. And so many of them kind of comment on each other or are
Yes.
in conversation, like, oh, Richard Matheson and this and that. And
Right.
it goes back and forth. And some of these ingredients, and obviously The Haunting and Shirley Jackson, like, is kind of the mother or, the blueprint for some of these movies. So, and
Exactly.
so many of them deal with grief, which we will get into, which is a fascinating aspect of ghosts in general and the genre. But I do have a question. So, have you ever lived anywhere? Have you had experiences with ghosts?
So when we lived at the boarding school campus, we lived in a house that was built in the 1930s.
Okay.
It was like one of the oldest houses on campus. And my husband and I do believe that there was a benevolent spirit in the house. Like I
Okay.
never felt scared, but there were a couple moments where we had a light in the closet that would turn on and off randomly. And it was a screwed in light bulb with a chain. So it didn't make sense. Like it wasn't like a flickering.
No.
It was literally like a light bulb that would turn on and off. And the maintenance people said that the wiring was faulty, which feels like a classic haunted house, like, oh, faulty wiring. I don't know. Apparently the theory was that one of the faculty members who had lived in the house had tried to do the wiring themselves, and had screwed it up. So that was technically explained. But then there were also a few moments where the one that was the most vivid that really felt like something was there was, my youngest son was still a baby. He was like maybe 6 months old and he was taking a nap in his crib. And I had told my husband, okay, I'm going to go take a shower, get ready for the day. The baby's napping. My husband was like, great, I'll take care of him if he wakes up. Take a shower, get out of the shower, drying off. I hear a man singing and I was like,
Oh my
oh,
God.
Chris is singing to our baby, right? Like he woke up
Yeah.
and it sounded enough like Chris sings in the house. He sings all the time. He's a loud guy. So I was like,
Yeah.
oh, Chris is singing to the baby. It's totally normal. I open the window in my bedroom, which actually looks out onto a field, down by, lower campus. And I see through the window, my husband is outside all the way down the field with the three kids. And I was like, oh. And was singing. Unexplained, but I do believe, like I said, it seems like a benevolent, like a cheery spirit who was maybe just hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good kind of spirit. I probably would have had a heart attack if I heard somebody singing and my husband was outside. I'd be like, oh my God.
Was very scary.
Yeah, it's kind of like I read last week, not a haunted issue, but I was just remembering like being a babysitter. A babysitter was like a kid, look under my bed, there's a monster under
Oh
there.
my
And
God,
so
I know.
yeah, so she looked
That's
and there was
terrible.
literally someone under the bed. Oh my,
I would
like
have a heart attack.
exactly, I'd be dead. But I did go to school briefly at Agnes Scott College. And I was told that the dorm I was in and the dorm room I was in was haunted by a Civil War widow and it would act up around Halloween. Thank God I was not there around Halloween because
Yeah.
yeah, that didn't sound very good. I have a lot of friends who have experiences. The last person I was involved with was working on a project in New York City. And lived in a place that was like an old monastery. And he was telling me stuff like, there'd be suddenly the floor was wet. And at first I'm thinking, okay, he's a little theatrical, like really. And then when I went over there and I met one of his kids came out. They were telling me even crazier stuff that went on in this house. And like, yeah, dad got one of those screw-in light bulb cameras because we would tell him this was happening and he didn't believe us and doors would just shut. And I was like, oh my God, you guys are scaring the hell out of me right now.
It's
But
really scary.
yeah, so.
I do think that that house I lived in was haunted because also my nanny one time was there And I was at work, and sometimes because I worked on campus, I would come home in the middle of the day, right? Like, I'm coming home to switch the laundry, or I'm coming home maybe in between classes to like get myself a drink of water. So she was there with the baby. She heard the back door open and heard somebody walk upstairs to our bedroom because our bedroom was upstairs, which is another thing all of these houses have in common is those haunted bedrooms upstairs. So she heard somebody walk upstairs and she thought it was me. She said hello. I didn't respond, right? Which she thought was weird. Like, that's weird. Usually Elizabeth high back, but she figured maybe I was having a bad day or I just was super tired. I needed to just come home and crash. And she went upstairs later to take some laundry up to the kids' room, and my bedroom was empty. No one was in there. I came in later. Obviously, I came in like a couple hours later, and she was like, "Hey, did you come home earlier?" And I was like, "No, I
No.
the first time I've been home."
Oh
So yeah,
my goodness.
strange. I believe that paranormal things happen.
Oh
I do.
yeah, there's stuff doesn't make sense. A coworker was talking about, again, it was like doors shutting in a place in Denver, and the house, enough weird things to happen that they moved. It was like, yeah, I think I would too. It was like, yeah, that's not cool. But yes, so haunted houses, I like this idea. I think it's 'cause there is stuff, we're never going to understand or be able to explain, but a lot of people will try to explain it to you. But yes, so we should probably start chronologically with The Haunting. Do you remember, did you read the book before you saw the movie, or do you have a good memory of when you first discovered this one?
Yeah, well, The Haunting of Hill House is one of my favorite books. I think it's just a perfect, like, I put it in the same category as Gatsby, which might be controversial because I know some people don't like Gatsby very much. But to me, both of
My
them are.
favorite book,
Well,
actually.
right? I feel like The Haunting of Hill House and Gatsby are these perfect little books where every sentence matters. Every line, there's not a wasted word in the entire book. Like, you can look at every sentence and understand exactly why it's there. So I've taught The Haunting of Hill House many times, and I had never actually seen The Haunting until a few years ago. I was looking up things, you know, sometimes I like to show video clips from things I'm reading to my students. And I found the clip of, it's the clip where she's in her bedroom. Nell is in the bedroom and she's looking at the wall, and you just hear like the voices coming through the
Oh
wall.
gosh.
And nothing actually happens. Like, the camera's just looking at a wall. For some reason, it's so terrifying and so scary. And I found that scene and I was like, oh, I should probably watch this whole movie.
Yeah, for sure. I remember seeing something with Martin Scorsese. I don't know if he made a list later, but it was a thing where he said it's, one of the 10 or 11 scariest movies he had ever seen in his life. And for sure, it's interesting. Robert Wise was working on like West Side Story at the time. And
Yes. Sorry.
I think he just read a review of the book and it just sounded interesting and then got into it. I love that Russ Tamblyn is involved
Me
because
too.
West Side, I love Russ Tamblyn, and of course Twin Peaks and West Side Story, as you do. And it was funny because he said, at first he read it and he's just like, this guy's a jerk, I don't want to play this guy. And reading it again and reading it again, he just realized what was so great about this thing. And after, he said, it might be one of the few best films I've ever been in. And I agree, it's a classic. It's up there with like The Innocence is another one. I did an episode on like gothic thrillers, gothic romance with Walter Chaw, and so these kind of go right together. So I do love it. I don't think I saw it though. This is sacrilege, until I first saw with my cousins the horrible Jan de Bont version of The Haunting in 1999. I remember seeing that for like Catherine Zeta-Jones, Liam Neeson, Lily Taylor, like being really excited, and it just not being very good. I think I read the book right after that, but I haven't read it since. And then a few years later, I saw The Haunting. Totally different experience.
I think the movie works so well in part because there's so little happening on screen where you have to do it all through sort of tricks, camera work, which I think is actually key to all four of these films because the whole concept of a haunted house is that you're not seeing what's in it. So the camera has to kind of be the haunting presence. And I love the way that Robert Wise does this in The Haunting. I think there's just so many genius moments where that camera is doing so much work. And then, of course, the performances as well. And it sets up that classic, the classic question of the book is it the house or is it Eleanor? And the answer
Yes, you
seems to
start
be it's
wondering.
probably a little bit of both,
Yeah.
right? Like the house itself does have this messed up history, and we have all of these, sort of paranormal events going on, but also Eleanor herself is haunted by her own decisions in the past, her own relationship with her mother, potentially killing her mother. And then, there's the question of is she actually causing the phenomena in the house? Which I think makes it so spooky.
Yes, so many of these films deal with grief and guilt, and there's mystery not only with the haunted house, but also like the culpability and what some of these people have done, their own, mental issues, their mental health. There's a lot of also physical issues, so questions of people who are, I mean, I hate this term, but in a sense, like broken or fractured, just like a ghost, is sort of part of them is left behind, or there's unfinished business, and there's unfinished business with a lot of these occupants too.
Yeah, this sort of trauma that haunts all of them. I mean, in the book, I do think The Haunting, the 1963 version, it's very truthful to the book. It's very faithful to the book.
Good.
But Eleanor is, we do understand that she was this caretaker of her mother, has this sort of stunted life, right? She's never had her own apartment. She's never lived on her own. She's never really been an adult in any sense. She's kind
Yes.
of trapped in childhood in her mind, which is another thing that keeps coming up in these films is these sort of stunted
Yeah.
children who are struggling in some way. So Eleanor really is a child, right, in her mind in this movie and in this book. And then
Yeah,
Theo,
this is her first time kind of like going somewhere on her
right,
own.
where she keeps
Yeah.
saying like, it's my vacation.
I know, and you're like to a haunted
What
house.
about Hawaii?
Yeah,
Maybe
what
we
about Hawaii?
don't
Yeah.
here. But like the idea is that this doctor has sent out all these invitations to people who had connections with the paranormal, and the only people who end up coming to the house are the two who are like super messed up. One is
Yeah.
Eleanor, of course, and then Theo. I find her just such a fascinating character.
Oh
She's
my goodness, the most
definitely
fascinating.
queer, right? Like a
Oh
hundred.
yeah, she's totally into Julie Harris. Yeah.
Yes, and in the book, my students will always say like, "But what was Theo's trauma?" And you do have she's clearly has. There's this sort of scene in the beginning of the book where you can tell she's broken up with her girlfriend, which
Yeah.
I think they edited out of the movie, question mark. I think I read that there was actually an original scene in there where you see her in this fight with her girlfriend, and she's
Okay.
written like, "I hate you" in lipstick on the mirror or something
Oh,
dramatic.
wow.
And then they
Yeah.
cut it because it was too explicitly queer.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's broken up with her girlfriend, but there's also this great line where she talks about going to boarding school, and she says, "You should have seen that school of mine during vacations. It was so empty." And so you get the idea that she's this
Oh.
kid who has been sort of abandoned by her family. It's unclear,
Yeah.
did her parents die? In the movie, even she says her name is only Theodora, right? She has no last name. So
Yes. Yeah, there's
she's
just this
like,
foreboding sense of loneliness around these people. Yeah.
Exactly. Which makes them open to being preyed on by the
Yeah.
paranormal. But
This
she seems
phenomena. Yeah.
she seems to have like no positive family connections in any way. And that sort of haunts the house as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what you said is also very true. I think sometimes in ghost stories and haunted house movies that when you show things, it can almost be silly or it's because it's playing on your mind. Like I was thinking of when I was watching this, like a movie that obviously took from this and the style was the first Conjuring. Is that the one with
Yes.
the
The
clap?
clapping.
Yes.
I thought that too.
One of the best sequences and the scariest in film is that
Totally.
clap sequence. And I was
Yeah.
just thinking about how effective it is because of how little is shown. Kind of like Hitchcock loved to do that. You know, his big trick was hold on something and just don't show it for as long as possible.
Yes.
And Paul Thomas Anderson said that's like the one lesson he keeps using. Like, keep a camera on and you know something bad is on the other side, but wait as long as you can before you show it. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, the Psycho House is a classic haunted house as well.
Yes.
Speaking of Hitchcock. But yeah, I do think that in this film, we get the seeds of a lot of haunted house films to come, for sure. You can see so many people drawing on it. And even, I don't know, did you see the miniseries, the Haunting of Hill House miniseries that Flanagan
did? I didn't watch it. No, was it good?
He takes Flanagan's Haunting of Hill House so much from The Haunting. I mean, there's entire sequences that I feel like he lifts directly from this movie and just sort of redoes with his own twist. But the DNA of this film is in so many haunted house films to come.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. Yeah, I think it's a classic. It's such an important movie to watch and I think inspires so much to come. The change, you know, I was going to say I'd only seen two of the films you selected, The Haunting and Stir of Echoes. I thought I had seen Poltergeist, but when I started it and got into it, I realized I think I've only seen clips of this movie, or maybe I saw it as a kid and I just don't remember it. So I'm counting it as a full new watch. And The Changeling. And The Changeling, it's from that era. It's like 1980, but it feels like a hangover movie from the 70s.
It totally like does.
These classy thrillers. You could imagine like Donald Sutherland in it or something.
Mm-hmm.
George C. Scott. That was my one issue. I love George C. Scott as an actor. So good. I mean, you know, hardcore. But you see him in this, and I was trying to articulate what wasn't working the most for me in it, even though I really liked the film. And part of it was he was almost too level-headed and too logical through it. And I think it was, I can't remember if it was Roger Ebert or a different critic.
Yeah.
A couple Ebert. Of them were talking about how he leaps to conclusions so easily, like right away, where it's like, oh, someone was wearing red because on January 5th, like he just jumps to the most extreme part of exposition where you're like, where did you get that? Yes. So that was my one issue, but I really liked The Changeling. And I think you could really kind of pair it. It isn't as good as Don't Look Now or some of those films, but it feels like it. It's slower, a slow burn. And there's a lot to these films, for sure. A lot about grief. My God, it's a sad, sad film.
No, yeah. Well, The Changeling, I mean, The Haunting also has, before the film starts, you see these tragic deaths that have occurred, right? And I think those deaths are shot really scarily, too.
Oh, my God, they are. The phone booth is The Changeling, like the visual.
In The Changeling, but in the beginning of The Haunting, you also see like companion suicide. You see her legs falling into frame. You understand this idea that like these two wives have died. You have the stair fall. I mean, I always feel like if a wife falls down the stairs, 99% of the time the husband is. It's not a ghost, which is also a question in The Haunting. Like, was Hugh Crane an abusive father and husband?
He's losing too many wives, people. It's like, we're going to, if it was today, there'd be an HBO, like, 8-episode series.
Exactly.
He'd pass to it in the bathroom.
You're wondering if the owl did it.
Yeah.
You know?
Or there'd be a staircase. Yes, exactly.
But yeah, you get this, these movies so often open with these sort of traumatic.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, in The Changeling, it's just chilling the way that George C. Scott is just watching from the phone booth. And you see this almost not totally Final Destination-y, but this kind of, you know, cause and effect thing happening where there's the snow and there's this truck and there's the car. And you just know like, oh, his wife and kid are not getting out of this alive.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought Final Destination. That was one of the scariest when I saw that movie. It was like, there's a kid crying, don't get on the airplane. You know, things
don't
like
get on
that.
The airplane.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Or where you don't know how they're going to die, like a coffee cup by the computer. You're like, oh God, what is going to happen?
The trailer for the new one is pretty fun.
Okay. I'll have to watch that.
Pretty crazy deaths in there. But yeah, you have this, I do think, I mean, so knowing George C. Scott, it seems like he is making a deliberate choice in this movie to be
Yes.
as impassive and
Yeah.
logical as possible, because he could easily have played it the other way. Like,
Oh
he
my
could
gosh.
easily have
Yes.
played it
So
as knowing,
histrionic. Yeah.
knowing Scott. Like, he could have played it totally over the top, which would have been fun. Grief
Yeah. We could have
father
seen like
traumatized.
Dr. Strangelovey kind of thing. Yeah.
Right, this broken man.
Yeah.
But instead, what we get, which I think is interesting, and I'm not sure it works all the time as a viewer, but I think what we get is this man who has decided, like, deliberately not to let trauma break him down.
Yes,
And
he's just kind
instead,
of going through it, going through
yes.
the motions, or like he plays the piano, just go through those scales, just do your thing day by day. Yep.
Exactly. And it even seems like, I mean, since the haunting spirit in the changeling is also a child who died
Yeah.
tragically, it does feel like he has this moment of like, okay, I'm going to be a dad
Yeah.
in whatever way I know, right? Like, my kid was taken
Yes.
away. Now this kid needs me. Like, and you, like, as a parent, there is sometimes a moment where if something really scary is happening to your kid, you kind of have to pull it together and lie and just be like, everything's going to be okay.
Yes,
Everything's
yeah.
fine, right? Even if you're on the airplane with turbulence and your kid's freaking out and you're internally freaking out, you have to kind of turn to them and say, it's fine. It's normal. This is air. Just hold my hand. We will be fine, right? And I feel like, in a
Yes.
way, that's what George C. Scott is doing in that movie, is see, like, feeling this traumatized ghost of a child and
Oh,
turning
God,
to
I
it and
know.
going, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through it. Like, I'm going to figure this out for you, even if inside he's not feeling great.
Yes, there was something very like almost Ken. Am I the only one who was thinking of the Kennedys when I was
Oh,
watching
no,
that? I
totally
mean,
not. Yeah.
there's like this Kennedy-esque thing with turn of the century. Of course, watching it now, I'm like, oh, there's a little Trumpy, like the history of these families. What did they do way back, and how is it paying off now? And this legacy of how they treat people, or
Right.
yeah, so it's really interesting. I love anything that's one thing that's so good about this genre or this subgenre is it deals with history.
Yes.
So,
History and memory.
yeah, history and memory. So you get all these things that I find so fascinating. You get psychology, you get history, you get philosophy,
But also,
humanity.
what you
Yeah.
see in each of these films, actually, is there's always an entity or person, or, we'll just say an entity because sometimes it might be a corporation, who wants to make money off of
Yes,
the
that's such a
property,
good point, Elizabeth.
right? So it's
Yeah.
like this selling of a false history that you get
Yes.
time,
Yeah. What is truth and what is, yeah.
which is so true to America. I mean, I think that
Yeah.
these are very American films, actually, because you do have
Yeah. A
this like
ghost story in Europe
idea.
would be totally different. Yep.
Oh, totally different. I
Yep.
mean, I love ghost stories in Europe, but I
Yeah,
think
yeah.
that monetary greed aspect of all of these films feels very American, right? That you have these.
Yeah, and rewriting the history and how can I
Yes.
cash in? Yeah.
Right. How can I delete this file so that I can sell
Yes.
property, so that I can become a famous politician, so that I can
Yeah.
whatever it is? And I do.
Intimidate so it doesn't come out. Yeah.
Right. And the idea that you have this old man who's this, successful politician, and he has this giant corporation, and he's just been, quietly knowing in the back of his head that he's profiting off a dead kid.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really.
Yeah. And doesn't want to fully admit it or yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah.
totally.
Yep. Or be confronted with, this false story that he's been living. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great too because you're dealing with, I love crime movies and crime books. But you're dealing with mystery and so there's a lot going on. So I did love all of that with the changeling. The thing I think Ebert and so many of these critics kept saying was, was the contemporaneous reviews, a classy or an elegant picture. And it really is. And I think part of the way that, or the reason they were choosing those words is it's not gory. And again, it also felt like, just like The Haunting, this could have been made in 1963 for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So there's something very mid-century about it, which is interesting.
Not gory, but it is scary. Like, I
Oh my
find
gosh,
The
yes.
Changeling actually quite frightening. I think the scene where you see the father drowning the kid
In the
is.
bathtub. What is the deal with so many of these movies and bathtubs? I was
I
also
know.
thinking of What Lies Beneath, and of course Psycho in the
Totally.
shower, and it's just like, oh my gosh.
Kitchen bathtubs are always a little creepy. But yeah, that drowning scene is quite upsetting.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And I think sometimes in movies, deaths take shorter than they would in real life. You know what I mean? Like somebody strangles them. Oh, they're
Yes.
only strangled for 2 seconds and then magically they're dead. But
Yeah.
this drowning really felt like he was holding that kid under for a long time.
Yeah, it was
Trouble.
exhausting. And yeah, you were with him in that scene. And he did not shy away, which, I give the director credit for, because I wonder if the studio pushed back a little bit, like, that's a little long, but you need it.
You need it.
Yeah, especially the way that everything plays out by the ending.
And I also think that seance scene is
Whoa.
just an all-timer, like a banger of a scene. That woman came in for one scene and she was like, I'm gonna sell this part, like that medium.
She was the Philip Seymour Hoffman of the movie. Like, that's what he would do in the 90s. He would be on and like, yep, I'm gonna make you remember me even if I have one line.
Exactly. No, she's so effective. That handwriting so fast on the papers. And I love how one guy's job is just to
Oh
like
my
move
God.
the papers so she can keep writing. But I think it's really, yeah, that scene is very effective and very spooky.
Yeah, it reminded me again, watching these in quick succession with The Stir of Echoes, when Ileana Douglas put Kevin Bacon under. That was like the one sequence I remembered, and him in the theater, the visualization of that, which I think Brian De Palma talked to the filmmaker about a little bit, like you need to do something more with that. And he did.
Sure did.
Or
Oh,
he
I
gave him
love
some
that.
camera advice too about like holding the camera on Kevin longer in certain parts. And yeah, I think that was important. But yeah, no, The Changeling and then Poltergeist, I will say watching it today, that was my favorite of the films for sure.
It's such
Besides,
a good
I
movie.
mean, The Haunting is in its own, that's a classic, but when you're talking about more contemporary, like from 1980, that's probably, one of the best haunted movies. I remember, clips of it. Again, I might have seen it, might have not, but I think Jo Beth Williams, this might be like I'd have to go and look at her whole filmography. She's always good, but my God, I think what you were saying
Great.
about The Changeling is so true for this movie too, about a parent wanting to be there. Like the amount of grief, it just reminded me of growing up with so many like surgeries and health issues, and how my mom would do the same thing you would, where it's like, oh, your daughter's heart rate is like 140 right now. It's gonna be fine, like even though things were really scary or whatever it was. And so just how terrifying it is when your kid is going through something and you can't help, as you would know as a mom, or just humans would know, we're protective or should be of children. And yeah, just the anguish. And I was like dying watching this movie, like, let's get the girl back.
I know. No, this was the first time I had rewatched it as a parent of
Oh my
three.
God.
And yeah, I mean, I used to be, so when my husband and I only had one kid, I used to be afraid of becoming the family from The Shining. Oh no, if we only have this one child, we'll be, Whitney and
The
Danny
scary
and
shit might go on.
but now that when I rewatched Poltergeist, I was like, oh no, we're actually this family. And
You have
Craig T.
three.
Nelson even reminded me of Chris in multiple moments in the movie. I'm like, that's something Chris would
I
do.
love Craig T. Nelson.
Oh, he's so great. But yeah,
Such a
this idea of
charming
like,
guy.
we have this child and she's gone, but she's still
Oh,
here.
yeah.
And metaphorically, it does feel, you could interpret it as like a child going through some kind of extreme medical event, right?
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
they're still here.
Yes.
I'm afraid that they're slipping
Yeah.
away.
Yeah.
And so that idea of like just needing to get her back, but also needing to not panic and like
Oh my
understand,
God,
how
I
do I get
know.
back?
Like
Is
the light sequence, like go to the light, don't go to the light. Oh my God. Yeah.
I know. I love that moment where the again we have a
Great
great
medium.
psychic,
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
psychic.
In this movie, but that moment where she's like, I'm gonna go in, and then Jo Beth Williams is like, it should be me, I'm her mom, like she trusts
Yeah.
me. And the psychic says, you've never done this before, and she's like, well, neither have you. Psychic's like, okay, fair, no, you should go.
Yeah,
And the mom
exactly.
has to go in after
Yeah.
the kid. But this movie, I do again, I come back to this idea of like it feels like the American haunted house, right? Even
Oh, absolutely.
stereotypically
Yeah.
than either of the other two. I mean, obviously you have Spielberg kind of behind the camera, but not really behind the camera.
Yeah, there's so many conflicting reports
Yeah.
on whether he actually like some of the cast members were, I was there for 6 days, Steven did all six, or
Right.
but because technically I think he was working on ET at the time and there was something in his contract where he wasn't allowed to direct, and
But it even looks like ET, like when
it
you're like, is
does
this the
so
same
much.
neighborhood? Like
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Steven's three houses down with ET, and then he's
I
like
know. When they go in the closet, I'm like, is Drew Barrymore in there?
I
Like,
know
yeah.
it actually feels like the same neighborhood, but he's doing that Spielberg thing that he does in Jaws of like the horror is an American horror specifically. Like,
Yes.
it opens with the Star Spangled Banner is playing on the TV. You have a
Yeah.
kind of like corporate greed on the like the part of the real estate company. We have to build these houses. We have to start phase 4 and phase 5, and so we're going to move these gravestones to another place, which is just tip to real estate developers, don't build on a cemetery.
No, my God. Yes. The other thing that and then I read that no, it was actually, I was watching it and thinking, God, this feels like the Twilight Zone. And it I guess Little Girl Lost, which was written by Richard Matheson, was kind of a touchstone. And he even commented, yes, but they did their own thing with it. And Matheson,
Right.
of course, wrote the book for Stir of
For
Echoes.
Vecna.
But what was interesting is just because I've been thinking a lot more of the Cold War era and what Rod Serling did with the Twilight Zone and commenting on America and conformity and racism and things that were kind of starting to bubble up and the way that our country was changing. And with two of my coworkers, Patrick and Sharon, we kept talking. I kept doing that. It's a cookbook. And we kept doing Twilight Zone lines that I wound up buying the box set and Blu-ray just in case they delete it from streaming
Sure.
the way that
No,
things are now.
physical media is the way to go
Yeah.
right now.
And so I got that, and then I've been watching some of those episodes, and then this, and I'm like, am I just hallucinating? And no. So I do love that it does have, as you were saying, a uniquely American style of horror, consumerism, and families trying to live the American dream. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like here we are in suburbia.
Yeah.
This is our dream home. We've worked, I think he even says, like Craig
Yes.
Jacobson says later in the film, like we've worked so hard for this, all these thousands of memories that we're trying to make. Again, this concept of memories, right? Like we're trying to make these core memories and we're not, but then there's the memory of the place is kind of interfering with that ability for the family to make their own memories. And even the idea of like we have these three kids, we have this, we watch football on the weekends, and we just have like the perfect life. And then of course it's so shattered by what
Yeah.
came before. And I do think all the performances in Poltergeist 2 are just so dialed in. Even the kids, I mean, they're doing
Yeah.
their job. The middle kid, Rob, he's like, I feel for him. He's so He reminds me of my oldest Cooper. I feel like that idea of counting the lightning and seeing is the storm coming closer or farther, this sort of anxiety at the heart of this kid. And you just feel so bad for these kids going through this trauma. Although I feel like they try to explain it away where they say, oh, she didn't remember anything, you know, when she comes out. Like she, but I don't really
That would mess you up. My God. Yeah. I think, let's watch that kid in the future. But, yeah, I think some of the scenes, watching it today, of course, the graphics and, the visual effects aren't what they should be. Or I would almost rather just see the act of like some of it. I don't know if we need to see the visualization a couple times, but
Some of
I,
the like flying around the room objects are pretty cheesy.
Yeah, I think the scariest sequence for me though is that ending, with the outside and like we need help and trying to get like the neighbors involved because there is the scariest thing ever of needing help and not knowing if you should intervene in somebody else's drama or something that's going on. I've had issues where, I was running away from somebody trying to get me in a car or something. And like, I think neighbors didn't know what was going on. And so, so the whole thing there, it kind of preys on, again, we have mothers and kids, and of course, fathers can identify too, but also this idea of women like, yes, get involved or don't get involved. And so it's scary.
Yeah, the neighbors like not wanting to come into the
Yes.
house with her when she's like, "Help me,
I
I gotta let my kid," right?
know.
And they don't want to come in. That is very similar, I think, to that moment in Halloween where Jamie Lee Curtis is like pounding on the door of the
Yeah,
house
and
and she's like,
nobody.
"Help me, help me." And the woman just turns off the light, right? This, and again, like Halloween is a classic suburbia, right? Like we are technically in a neighborhood, but we don't want to talk to our neighbors. We don't want to know our neighbors.
Oh my gosh. I couldn't pick mine up out in a lineup, I think. The further west you get, the more people kind of isolate. At least in the Midwest, everyone, you bring over crock pots of food and blankets and stuff. And when I moved here, it was like, wow, I don't even know anything about these people.
I know. Yeah. So you do feel that even though they're on the same TV remote, right?
Yes, I
TV
love that.
remote works for each other's houses. They can't connect. They can't talk. And there's no help there.
Technology, Elizabeth. Look at that. It was
I know,
foreshadowing.
right? But I do think one of the effective things in that movie is that closed door upstairs. And I know I referenced this upstairs bedroom that we see so much, but there's so much going on there. I mean, it reminded me a lot of The Exorcist, right? Where you have this closed door up the stairs and you're always kind of sort of constantly tracking up and seeing this door. And you just know if we open the door, some horrific thing is going to be revealed to us. So we keep the door closed as much as we can, which feels, you know, metaphorical again, right? Like we all have these locked
So
doors
cool,
in our minds that we can't open up for fear. Again, maybe this goes back to grief or trauma, right? The way you compartmentalize and lock away, like I'm going to take this part of my brain or my memory, and just kind of seal it off. Because if it's open, as we see with Kevin Bacon's character in Stir of Echoes, if the doors are open, too much comes in and you can't handle it.
Oh, that's a question I was going to ask you too. Okay. So, as a mom and just a sane, intelligent person, after
Mostly
your
sane.
kid comes back from such a thing, would you ever put your kids back in that fucking room?
No, and I do
Go
take issue with
to
that.
a
I do think
hotel!
it really
I'm
does
like,
feel like,
what is going
why
on,
did they need to
Joba?
be in there?
Like, take them up, bring them down. Let's all camp out in the family room if you couldn't afford a hotel or something.
They did get the like all clear from the psychic, right? Like this house is clear, this house is clean. But at the same time, I would not put them back in that room. Seems like we should have thought something
Yeah, I think
there.
I was shouting at the TV, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, like I'm just gonna also that sequence with her feels a little bit like the end of Alien almost. They're like, I'm gonna strip down, I'm gonna take my pants off so I'm in my little underwear and I'm gonna relax. You know, and you're like, no,
This
put
isn't the
your
house
pants
for
back on,
this.
you have children to save.
I know. it's not a night to like hang out in your room and smoke pot or whatever she was gonna do.
Exactly. Like, please do not do that right now.
I
But we
know.
do
You
have,
need your lucid.
yeah, we have those, like, the it's the three levels, right? Which goes back to, it goes back to the psycho house with Hitchcock, right? It's the id, ego, and super ego. You have the id is the basement, or in the cases of these movies, the well, the swimming pool, the like that underground thing that is just the where the pure heart of the evil lies. Then you also have this ego level, this middle level where everything seems fine, where you can trick yourself into like, we're okay here in this part of the house. And in Poltergeist, like that's where we're gonna set up
The
all the
rational,
children. Yeah, that rational level. Or in Psycho, where Norman Bates is like, I'm just gonna sit here at my table and like think about my next move. And then we have that super ego upstairs, and in the Changeling, it's that terrifying room that we keep seeing, that locked in room. And in the Haunting, it's the bell tower, right? Or the tower. And in Poltergeist, it's that bedroom where you know, like, this is where some external ideals of the world have created the monster, right? Where in, if I'm thinking in the Changeling, you have, this is where the father decides, right? Like, I am at this act to advance myself and my kids in life, right? Or where in the Haunting, it's the decision, like the companion makes this decision to kill herself there. And you have that over and over, these sort of like three levels that we're constantly navigating. You always have to have the staircase, which, by the way, we didn't talk about that sequence in the Changeling with the fire coming down the staircase. I thought that was so incredibly shot. I love, but you have to have the stairs, something, what's at the
Stairs
top
play a
of the
part in
stairs?
all of these.
Yes. How do you navigate these levels? And eventually they all either burn up or collapse in on themselves.
And the role of trauma, which definitely, so Matheson wrote that episode, Little Girl Lost, which kind of helped inspire or was a touchstone for Poltergeist, wrote the book for Stir of Echoes. This is one that I remember seeing in 99, which was a very haunted year. We had the remake of The Haunting. We had like Sixth Sense. We had a bunch of these. I mean, you always had horror movies around this time. And today too. I mean, horror movie, it's an a genre that keeps inspiring and keeps, scaring the hell out of audiences and does really well. But I remember seeing this. It kind of then fell under the radar. I was drawn to it because of the cast and because I was a nerd and I was like, oh, David Koepp wrote something. David Koepp definitely has a thing for stories about horrible things that happen to girls. So I think we got to talk to David a little bit. But I like what he's going for. It was interesting watching this back to back with, Presence, which I preferred. I loved Presence. I thought there's so much to that. I'm like, why aren't we talking about Presence more? I haven't
I still
seen.
haven't seen Presence. I really want to. It's I
Okay. I
on my
want to
list.
know your take on that for sure. I haven't seen Black Bag yet. I'm a huge Soderbergh person,
Oh, me too.
but yeah, so I'm excited about that, but I think I would love to know your response. So like email me or we have to have a Zoom when you're done. But yeah, I want to know about Presence. But yeah, David Koepp, one of the best screenwriters. He's also really good at things in tight spaces. Panic Room, of course. Bad Influence, that whole apartment,
I
that
love
whole
Bad
setting.
Influence.
Yeah, at consumerism. So he's good at American horror. Directed this, wrote it. I didn't like it as much at all on the second viewing, but I love the cast. Catherine Erb, Ileana Douglas, Kevin Bacon. Yeah, good cast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this film also, it sort of continues, like I said earlier, it does feel like it plays with the same ingredients as the other
Absolutely.
movies. It's just trying to do a slightly different thing, but we still have this, like, oh, we're in the best neighborhood in the city of Chicago because we all look out for each other. And then in this, of course, you also see your neighbors are the people that you should fear, right? And
Do you know people at all? Yeah.
yeah, exactly. And you have this attempt to live the American dream, right? Like, oh, my kid's playing football and he's going to be, you
Yeah.
know, the sort of
He's
corrupt
got the
kid.
arm and like,
Yes.
yeah, he does. Yeah.
He definitely does.
Yeah.
This corruption at the heart of this sort of like supposedly idyllic life.
Yeah.
But I do like that. So I guess Poltergeist, I think, is the only one of these films that actually feels like it has a functional family at the heart of it.
Yeah, I
The
don't
other
get this
ones,
marriage.
no, it
He's an
doesn't seem.
asshole. They're kind of not the most mature people. You can
Yeah.
tell he just wanted to be a rocker, and he's like, "Oh, I don't want to be famous." Bullshit. If he was offered it like a record deal the next day, he'd probably bail on everything.
Totally. And he has the exact wrong response to learning that his wife is pregnant.
I know.
Being like,
Bummer.
bummer.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what are you doing with this guy? But yeah, and I love how Ileana Douglas is over it like immediately. Like, why are you? Yeah, because you always have that thing. I have had friends, thank God they're divorced and much happier now, where it was that thing where you couldn't really tell the people, like, are you sure about this guy? Like, it would depend, what is my relationship with them like, and what is, and so yeah, it, and I love that they are close enough and she knows her so intimately because it is her sister. It's a little different when it's a friend, or you know, or because you don't maybe see them from that perspective as much, but being that she's her sister and probably over there so much, she sees it all. And wow, yeah, she is unamused, and I like their dynamic. But yeah, Bacon, unafraid to play bad. One of my favorite Bacon performances ever is The River Wild, and he
Oh, yeah.
has the best line, "I am a nice guy, just a different kind of nice guy." And I quote that all the time, and I just think that is perfect. He's good at that.
I think you totally buy his character in this
Yeah.
movie. You buy that he's like
Oh,
this
I've met those guys,
disgruntled.
dated those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, and he hasn't had the success he wanted in his career.
Yep.
He's sort of like sees himself a little bit as a loser.
Yeah.
And that
I'm owed. Yeah.
yeah, that infects it all. But I do love that Ileana Davis almost, it seems like, maybe on purpose kind of fucks him up for life,
Oh
right?
my God, I think so. Like, you need to be open. Well, I would
Yeah.
be, if that was like my best friend or my sister, or just, and that was the reaction, be like, fuck you. I would
Yeah.
be a little tempted to do some shit. Yeah. Especially
But
the way
again,
he acts with her right
yeah.
before. He's like a bully. Yeah.
He is. He totally is. And I think what's interesting about it is if we do have these sort of locked doors and locked bedrooms in these other movies, here you have a character saying, like, I'm not going to let you lock anything up anymore. Like,
Yes.
now all the doors have to be open. And it torments him, right? Like, where he's
Yeah.
now like flooded with this stuff that he doesn't understand. I think that sex scene is so troubling.
Yes. Oh my God, it's so disturbing.
Where
Yeah.
she's like super into it, and he's like, hold on, I'm getting
Yes.
images of something bad.
Yes. Is that the one with the fingernail? Oh God, there are some images in that movie that just scare me to death.
There
Yeah.
really are. I mean, the tooth thing for me is
Oh,
not
yeah.
like
Oh, yeah.
taking the tooth out in front of the mirror. That's like a classic anxiety dream.
Yeah, it's like, are we in the fly all of a sudden? Yeah. Yeah.
And all those, I mean, that is so similar to that Poltergeist scene, right? Where the guy
Yes.
goes in front of the mirror and his face is like rotting off. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's great and upsetting. But I also did, I mean, I think that the kid talking to the ghost is another classic thing that this movie uses, which reminded me even a little bit of Sinister, right? Where you have this kid who's like tapped into, like, I can talk to Sixth Sense, right? I can see dead people.
Yeah, kids that are like in tune with ghosts or scary, that to me is like the scariest thing ever. I remember it was like one of the new nightmare, I think it was. There was something with a kid, and we got to a scene on the playground, and my brother's like, I'm gonna have, and he loves horror movies, I'm gonna have nightmares, I can't do kids being freaky. Like, it just, that was too
No.
much.
Okay. So this story will bring us full circle back to Mike Flanagan's Haunting of Hill House miniseries. But there's a, no spoilers, I guess, for anybody who hasn't seen it and wants to. But there's an episode. The episode I think is the best is called The Bent Neck Lady. And there's this
Okay.
image returning throughout the episode of this woman standing over her the bed with like this neck sort of bent over in this atrocious, awful way that where she's clearly. Again, no spoilers, but like somebody who's hung themselves,
Yes,
right? Like standing up,
exactly.
right? Just haunting, the bedside of this character. And it's a very scary episode. Again, like one of those moments where you're like, that scared me, and now I need to put the light on while I'm in my own bedroom. And the night I watched that episode, my oldest kid was about six, I think. He was like 5 or 6. And I was sleeping and had that thing where you wake up because you just kind of feel watched. And I opened my eyes and my son is standing.
Oh,
I
geez,
kid you
Cooper,
not,
no.
standing over the bed, leaning over me exactly like the bent neck lady. I did the full body, like sitting straight up gasp, where I was
Did
like,
you hear this happen?
like I was coming out of a tomb. And I was like, Cooper, you can never do that again. Like, what are you
Oh
doing? And he was like, I just wanted a glass of water, And I was like, please, please just wake me up next time. Like, put your hand on me and say, Mommy, I need water. Like, do not stand and stare until I just wake up from the power of you staring because I will have a heart attack. But
Just
I
the
do think,
lurking, yeah.
yeah, I do think he and I are sometimes we have like a psychic connection where we'll have the same word in our mind or we'll say the same thing at the same time. So I always wonder, like, did he kind of know I had that image in my head and he just imitated
Yeah, it
it?
is weird sometimes you have that with relatives. Like, I remember once I had a dream that something was up with an uncle that I hadn't talked to in a long time. And the next day we heard from him that he had like fallen off a ladder. He was okay, but he did get hurt. And it's like, what the hell?
Well,
Or,
yeah.
weird things like that. Like my brother and I being in opposite sides of the country, and we called each other and we're like, yeah, what are you doing? I'm watching traffic. Where are you? And we were like 10 seconds apart in the same movie. It was so weird.
That's really bizarre.
Yeah,
But
sometimes, yeah.
I do love in Stir of Echoes how those visions are like,
Yeah.
you do have this character who's having these visions and he's wondering, what do they mean? And trying to grapple with that. And again, the digging, right? Like just like we have the swimming pool, we have the
Oh
well,
my
we
God.
have digging into the bottom of the house, and this sort of excavation.
Again with water and this idea of cleaning, maybe like washing out the ghosts and washing out the bad. I don't know, but it's repeating throughout. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, it's really scary. Talk about trauma. This one to me, especially with the changeling. Really felt like the same thing. Like we need to unresolved business of just a violent, horrible death. Kind of like you brought up with the haunting. Was this guy killing off his wives? We don't know. Yes.
And both in the Changeling and in Stir of Echoes, too, you have this sort of image of a person, child who is, has disabilities, who
Yes.
lives with disabilities. And so the way that that person is preyed on by others is
Yeah.
extremely disturbing,
Very
and
disturbing.
troubling. And I
Yeah.
do think that both films do it pretty tastefully, although I don't know if the wheelchair chase in the Changeling is tasteful.
No. And then the wheelchair image at the end, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know
But,
if I need that.
yeah.
It's definitely like this concept of how evil do you have to be to hurt
Yes.
then who can't, either sort of understand what's happening or fight back for themselves.
Yes. The one thing I also loved in this is it was produced by Gavin Pallone, who produced Gilmore Girls, and I do like that this was before that, and it had Liza Wheel as this very knowing and forthright and stubborn girl, which is exactly what she played on Gilmore Girls, who was willing to stand up and just assert herself. And so I do love that in this, especially because I will say the female characters, it's a little troubling in this movie. So I was glad to see a feisty young woman who was willing to stand up. I liked it when people were standing up to Kevin Bacon, and also just the way that some of the men were treating them and objectifying them throughout.
Totally. I think that there's, I mean, in both Stir of Echoes and in The Changeling, you have this idea of like, maybe we can right this wrong. Maybe we can free this spirit. Maybe we can make things better again, right? Like, we can restore some kind of humanity is the wrong word, but we can have some kind of restoration if we try
some
hard
sort
enough.
Of justice or balance. Yeah.
Right. But I do think that The Haunting does not have that.
No, not at all.
The Haunting is not attempting to restore anything. It's just like, all right, well, now we go back into a cycle, and maybe 90 years from now, another woman will die senselessly.
Yeah. It's like, nobody come to the house.
Right.
It's
and then
the room in the poltergeist, like, leave it, you guys, come on. But I like that place just kind of implodes. Yeah.
And I don't feel that Poltergeist has any restoration of justice at the end either, because the house sort of collapses in on itself, but all of the undead body, like, the bodies are still there.
The kid knows there's more drama everywhere. Yes.
Right. And I don't think that the company who owns that land is going to then take those bodies and give them a proper burial.
Oh, not at all.
Like, in another graveyard. And I'm sure they're going to continue on with phase five. Like, again, to go back to this, like, evil American
consumerism. Yeah.
Yeah. You just know that development's going to keep going, and people will just pass it off as, oh, this tragedy happened and there was like a crazy family or something. And then it's just going to continue on. So it's interesting to me that in two of these films, we do have what I think is sort of the more classic version of a haunted house, which is, if we listen to this ghost, if we try to connect with what they're saying, then we can free their spirit and we can send them spirit to rest. But then in the other two, it's like, no, things are just fucked. Like,
yes, exactly.
At all.
Some stuff you cannot, you can't right that wrong. There is no justice for some of this. Or explanation. Like, there's just too much that is uncertain, kind of like the idea of ghosts. We're never going to fully understand it, because it's otherworldly and beyond our comprehension. But other films that you recommend that are kind of this idea. So I'm going to be rewatching Rosemary's Baby for an episode with Adam Neiman on Ira Levin Thrillers. And I thought of Repulsion when I was watching some of these as well. Of course, you mentioned The Shining classic.
Yes.
Don't Look Now. Any others that you recommend? Because this is your genre. So.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked The Others. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember really liking The Others a lot in terms of that. It does the twist really well. I don't know. Again, I haven't seen it in a long time, so I'd have to rewatch it. But
me too.
I do like the way that plays with it. We mentioned The Conjuring, and I think The Conjuring is great. Anything with Patrick Wilson, really.
Yes.
The Conjuring's awesome. The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, do you know that one?
Yes.
That's an old one. I mean, it's not quite the same because it's not really a haunted house, but if we're talking about just about ghost movies, that's one that I saw. I like caught it on TV when I was a teenager, and it was one of those things where it was kind of on in the background. I think I was homesick or something,
you know,
sick day movie that I just turned on the TV and found myself really drawn in and like, wait, what is happening in this movie? What is going on? And then, I mean, I do think Evil Dead 2 is a great haunted house movie. Evil Dead 2 is so fun too. I mean, Bruce Campbell is just at the top of his game in that movie.
For sure. Yes, but I loved this idea. I loved exploring it with you. So any more ideas you have, just let me know. You always are welcome back. You and Chris, you separately and Chris separately, you know, Cantwells have an open invite for sure.
Well, this was really fun. Thanks for letting me get to rewatch these movies and talk about them with you. I actually did have so much fun It's just so much fun to watch good movies, Jen.
I
Watching good movies,
know
it's
there
one
aren't
of
that
those
many
things.
anymore.
It's
Yeah,
one of
no.
those things that's bringing me joy. Just turning on
Right.
a movie and knowing you're in good hands with a director who is going to be doing something interesting, making choices, not relying on AI to generate backgrounds or
I
whatever it may
know.
be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot to even mention in Poltergeist the dolly zoom. It's
Yes,
just
the
straight
Dolly
out
Zoom
of like,
shot, so good.
yeah, it's like Vertigo and then the Spike Lee thing. So I love that too. It's fun to watch these. The directors are doing things. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. And I was grateful to watch all of these. I'd only seen half of them. I'm also grateful that Cooper didn't make an appearance and lurk and
Again.
scare us to
Thank
death. No,
God.
I love your kids, but yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Jen.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.